Hello, it's great to have you with me. I'm Kim Clyden, former ABC radio presenter and children's book author, creating a community of people who care about children. How do we nurture creative, connected, resilient, emotionally intelligent, and empowered children? And they say it takes a village. So if you're feeling overwhelmed by the responsibility, you're not alone. I believe we can change the narrative for our children, but to do that, we need to change our story. How many friendships made in early childhood last a lifetime? Well, in my own life, the answer is none. But for others, those early bonds create lasting connections. My guest today is someone whose life milestones span continents, cultures, and communities. His mission is rooted in something beautifully simple: social impact as a force for good. James Kellock was born in Scotland, but his childhood was anything but ordinary. At just 2 months old, he, along with his siblings and mother, moved to the UK to live with his grandmother, while his father worked in Saudi Arabia. 4 months later, the family reunited, and James spent his earliest years immersed in a culture far from home. He would go on to complete much of his primary schooling in Dubai. Those early influences of cultural richness and the experience of belonging across borders planted the seeds for the global kindness movement James is leading today. An organisation built on a bold truth that every person has the ability to lift someone else, spark hope, and make a difference. As the founder of All We Can Foundation, what began as a grassroots initiative in schools, churches, and community groups has grown into an international platform helping people transform everyday kindness into measurable impact. James believes that when we create environments where kindness is recognised, celebrated, and repeated, we shape not only individuals, but cultures. Welcome, James. Considering you spent your childhood across multiple countries, how did your family foundation shape your perspective today?
Well, heritage and our history was quite important. What was the feeling I said, a sensation I definitely got early on. Like, one of the earliest sort of memories or stories was that when my brother was born, my grandfather, on my dad's side, was delighted because someone carried the family name. And then when I was born third time round after my sister, some 6 years after her, my grandfather was delighted because there were two people carrying the family name. And I think that was an almost probably a relief as well as a joy to them. And that I feel that was quite important to my dad to appease his dad. Now, I've got two boys as well, but also got a little girl. And I don't think that sensational need passed on to me. I was like, great that my name's going to carry on, hopefully with two boys, but I'm just as delighted if my little girl carries on and has another name, and as long as they're happy.
We see Dubai today as a very busy place. What was it like for you as a child?
Dubai was an interesting place to grow up. It was sand everywhere. You had to go to the desert for it. It literally just was there. Obviously now most people over there see luxury and see fancy cars and big Jeeps and stuff like that. My mum had a Mazda 323, which is like a small little tiny car. Not off-road car at all. And they had three main roads. They had the beach road, middle of the Wassel road, and then Abu Dhabi road. And we lived between the Abu Dhabi road and Al Wassel road. And my mum would literally just drive down the road and we'd go, "Mum, my house is over there." She'd go, "Oh," and just veer off on the sand that you just make your own way to the house. So there was occasionally we had to get out and push because she picked the wrong way. But, you know, that was life over there. They kind of built houses and then went, "Oh, we want to get there. Well, we'll just patter down some sand." And that was it.
It sounds like a world far removed, though, from your life in the UK previous. So how did that cultural adaptation impact you as a boy?
I really enjoy my characteristics. I really enjoy people. I really enjoy different environments and different things every day. More joy than I have waking up at 4:45 to speak to you in Australia. Just the opportunity to speak to new people is great for me. And so I was just multicultural. Dubai became very, very multicultural very quickly. And so I was hanging out with people of all different races and interests, and And I got a very, very hard, fast rule into, like, just doesn't matter what color is, you just play. It was great. I loved it. The locals were so kind and so generous. And I'll just say, at a young age, I was getting a taxi, which was basically hailing down any Tom, person, Adam, or whatever, and getting in the back of the car and haggling for a taxi ride by a country club, which sounds really posh when I say that. But yeah, basically, there was a country club, and it was basically a sports club. And I used to haggle. The best thing was I was given like 20 dirhams and going, you know, get to the club. And the more I could discount the taxi, the more snacks I could have when I got to the country club. So one day I did get a guy who I was like, nah, it's fine. And this is like 10. Nah, it's fine. I'll get the next one, because there was always another one. And so I got him down from normally an average was 15 to 20 dirhams. I got him to 10. So I was like, that is another Shirley Temple. Here we come.
I love it. Picturing this young boy, you said 10 years old, you know, getting a cab. How on earth did you navigate that phase of your life? And were those early days in Dubai preparation for what was to come?
Yeah, so I say my sister and my brother are 6 and 7 years older than me. They went to boarding school as well. So I spent a large amount of my time in Dubai as an only child to a degree, except for the school holidays. But then when I went to school, boarding school in Bath, my sister switched boarding schools up north to down south in Bath, where we are today, to kind of give me someone to know in the area. But, you know, she was 6 years older than me. She didn't want a little brat brother near her. So she was really loving, supporting. But obviously in school, it was like, just get away from me. Like, you know, just get away. Because I was year seven. She was lower six. But she did do me up solid, because she got suspended for hanging out on a Friday night. So basically, she did a lot of things not amazing. So I looked like the golden child of my family. So the teacher really loved me. So she did lots of good things for me. But it did set me up quite well, because I got used to being alone a bit, because of my brother and sister away. And my dad was often traveling with work. So I did get used to that. And then I did do a lot of traveling on my own. So independence became quite a fast lesson to have. But, you know, looking back at it now, I thought it was lots of fun, but there was probably lots of things that I was struggling with as well. And that was probably loneliness as well, because the weekends, boarding school, I was the only full-time boarder in my year. And so weekends, when the only other actual boarder was there, when he goes home every weekend on a Friday after school, I didn't see him till Monday morning. It got a bit lonely in the weekends with nothing to do, because we didn't do sports, which was my year group, because we were too small. So, yeah, long weekends, whether you're above, don't want to play with you. So I was normally building myself for Sunday night, because one of our teachers used to do a Sunday night football for an hour. So I was like, and it didn't matter what age group you were in. So I used to look forward to that. But that was definitely challenging when I look back at it. And I'm aware it was a challenge, and I got through it. So that's what matters.
Given that you went from the UK to Dubai, and then your siblings, who were much older than you, went to boarding school and left you basically with your parents, how challenging was it to maintain friendships through that period of your life?
I remember there was a few really good friends I had at primary school in a school called Jess in Dubai. Daniel Cottier, Daniel Hamilton, and Jonathan Wong. I have never found them since. I think I maybe made them up, because I have looked for them, because they obviously had a lasting impression on me from school when I was like 10. Because I went to school in Blackburn for a bit between boarding school and my mum. But my first school burnt down, so I went to a second school. So I did have a few school changes. I know the burning was nothing to do with me. I did have one solid friend, Paola. She was really good. We used to have tennis lessons together at the club. I say tennis lessons, we lapped most of the time, because I made her laugh and our coach just made her lap because she was laughing. And then I laughed because she was lapping, so I ended up lapping. And our parents would literally stand there going, why have we paid for our kids to run around the court? It's pointless. Poor Tony Monday, lovely, lovely guy. He must think, what was I doing as a coach? This is like not what I signed up for. But she's been like in and around and caught up with her last week, actually. It's been nice to see her again. But we went to rival schools. She came to school in Bath as well, but she went to Pride Park. I was at Kingswood. In Dubai, I was at Jess. She was at Des. So we were... I think our parents actually didn't want us to get to know each other better. So they're going, you two, after those tennis lessons, never again.
You two are just trouble, and that's just going to get worse.
Yeah. I sense that's where it was going. It's only caught on to me now. I'm very slow learning. I suppose with Paolo, it was like nothing changed when we spoke. It was just an easy conversation. So, yeah, that was just quite relaxing. and going, this is literally old times, we just look a bit older. But you know, when you find those people, you find like our conversations leading up to this podcast, which is really easy conversation. Some people you just connect with, like Alo, I did really connect with. And so, yeah, it was nice having someone who has a couple of memories of when you were young. And my partner, she has got one friend she's had since school. And I'm really jealous of that. They talk every Sunday and I'm really jealous of that because of like, what a great thing. And it's like, I have a friend who I've known longer than she's known her friend. And he's a really clever product designer. And I know he's made this toy that my partner's found that she wants to get. And I'm like, I've known him. I've had him on holiday. I mean, we were on the holiday together. I'm like, I still don't think I could pick up and go, by the way, my missus really likes this present for our daughter. Can you give me a discount? It's like, but she's been going like, oh, it's such a great present. I'm like, yeah, I do know the guy who made it, but I can't pick up the phone.
That sounds like there's a disconnect somewhere in there, James. So what length have you gone to in the past for those friendships?
I've known some amazing people and I still do know amazing people. And it's just, I know so many people in our lives are going to be there for a season. And people turn up when they need to turn up. And that's just the way it is. And our lives will go off and spurt off in different ways. And like one of my very good friends, again, we are talking cheese now, but when we were younger, our interests were aligned a lot more. And we had some great times, like literally playing one-on-one rugby in his garden, for example. And he was very clear on his focus. He wanted to go to university in London or Manchester. He wanted to be a DJ, that was it. And I see clips now of him on Facebook, and he is a DJ. Now, he was an accountant or financial advisor, worked very, very high up in London, and he went to London University. But he was very clear, and now he's DJing all over the world, and I'm like, awesome, like, fair play to you. I played on his decks after 30 seconds, yeah, this is really cool. Should we go outside and play rugby again? And he's like, no, I'll do this for like an hour. I'm like, I slowly started seeing like our paths were slightly different, but we still had a great time. It was just, you know, that's what happens. Men are not great at attaching to those things that kept them friends. And it's a shame. It is a really shame because I've known some people who are awesome. But they were awesome for me as a friend to get me through that phase.
I learned probably too late in life that people come into your life for a reason, a season or a lifetime. And I've found that's been really helpful. But it's not something we actually teach our children. We send them out there. Sometimes we'll set them up on play dates, but we don't talk about friendship a lot. So what do you think would have been more helpful to you through that period if you were guided by a parent or a friend?
I'm in the position now where I'm really fortunate. My partner is awesome. She is my best friend. She's released me from wearing masks, which I've worn for years. So I met an incredibly clever lady a few weeks back, Dr. Jennifer Fraser in Toronto. If you need to chat to her. We had a really interesting chat about masks that we wear. And it's true, I was wearing so many different masks. I was the mask of the guy who was coaching hockey. I was the mask of the guy who was playing hockey. I was the mask wearer of a dad. I was the mask wearer of someone in a corporate organization. I was a mask wearer for friends when there were just me and my friends. And then there was me and my family life at the time sort of thing. And I'm like, well, what's my kids? And then there was that little old mask at the really core of it, which was me. And so I was flipping all the time between who am I to these people and what do I have to be to that person? And I have to cage that part of me. I've got to cage that part of me. And unknowing to me, my partner's just been peeling those back going, no, they're not you. They're not the guy I actually, you know, fall in love with. And you don't need to be those other people to anyone else either, because they're going to take you for who you are. And that gave me so much more strength. And every day she challenges me to kind of just keep being me. And I found that that's given me stability and confidence to go out and go, I'm going to build now my core network, my surrounding party of people who get me for who I am. And that's become just a really joyful place to be, because I'm meeting wonderful human beings who go, I get you. I understand you, and I don't have to put my performance for it. Just let all the masks drop off and go, if you don't get me, that's fine. And I'm really, I'm really grateful for your time. But obviously, our paths won't need to keep crossing if I'm not the sort of person you want to hang around.
You have two older sons and you have a younger daughter. So knowing that now, how has your parenting changed in relation to the way you relate to your boys and your daughter?
So that's fun. So I've got a 16-year-old, a 13-year-old, and a 2.5-year-old daughter. And I have, my partner is a primary school teacher. So she kind of unknowingly kind of went about 5 or 6 months ago now, went, yeah, but Josie, you've got ADHD. And I was like, what's what? Pardon? Come again? It's like, yeah, you've got ADHD. I was like, do I? But you did not know this? I was like, no. She's like, oh. And I was like, that explains a lot. And I was like, have you known this? She's like, yeah, I've known the whole time. It's like, oh. And then I started releasing some stress against myself and started to be kind to myself a little bit more when I'm at those lows, because I couldn't be at those peaks. Like, she's seen those sides where I am literally all guns blazing. And then I hit the lows and I'm like, I'm a failure. I'm not doing very well at this. Now, when I get to that point where I'm there going, you're not a failure, you're just on the low part of it. So give yourself some grace. And so I found that when I'm coming to teach my kids, which is where your question was originally, ADHD took over a little bit there, but I got it back. See, so I learned learning every day, school day. I need to also realize that my mood is affecting them massively. I'm very fortunate that my 16-year-old is quite a mature 16-year-old, but I have to treat all three of them very differently. Like my 13-year-old, I'm still hands-on. We're still going through maintaining tasks and make sure he's on top of that, because he gets very easily distracted as well. I don't know where he's got that from. So he kind of needs to be kept on point. And then I'm now seeing glimpses in my daughter, and it's hilarious because she'll be like, blah, 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 and then she'll throw her toys, walk off and do something else. I'm like, oh no, another one. My partner's there going, what have I got in this house? Like, it's chaos everywhere. Bless her. I don't know why she gets up in the morning sometimes to join in. She's like, this is just going to be chaos today. I should stay in bed. But she gets up and joins in.
That's parenting, I think. That's families, full stop. You know, I think if we expect anything else, we're in for bitter disappointment.
Yeah, but I don't think I really answered your question, but I think for the teaching, what I would share with them now, what I do share with them now is like, A, you've got to live life. You've got to try and engage with the people that actually strengthen you and bring out what you feel is natural inside. I tried so hard to fit in at school, really tried hard to fit in at school. And if anything, that made my big mask, like the thicker one, come out really early doors. So I was a sporty kid in a very non-sporty year. So peer pressure for me to fit in, but basically what I meant, bottling my personality up. And I don't want my kids to bottle up. I was like, there are people out there in any school you go to who are probably like you, are just a fearful. So you've got to be the strong ones. They will go, this is who I am. And then there will be people who like you. In general life, you'll find them easier because you'll do start doing activities that they do and stuff like that. But at school, it's a bit harder. I just don't want to bottle up who they are because it's brutal. You know, because you're lying to yourself as well as lying to everyone else. That's a horrible place to go.
James, you went to a private boarding school, which is often seen as privileged or even posh. Were you treated differently because of your education?
So I'm a kinesthetic learner. Again, something I learned about 6 months ago, which I was like, what? And my partner knew from the moment she saw my primary school reports that my mum brought out. She's there going, yeah, kinesthetic. And I was like, but no one knew, and it wasn't a thing back then. It just basically was, I would not concentrate in class, but I would put lots of effort in. I would really, really lots of effort, but not much execution. I coped through school because I went to a boarding school, because I was there, and my teachers were brilliant. Like, my charity that I've set up, two of my teachers are trustees. One was a surrogate father to me. He got me my Scotland hockey trials. He ended up getting my England hockey trials. He supported driving me and getting me to the airport from my boarding house for my rugby, because I played Scotland rugby as well as hockey. And so he would basically get me to Bristol Airport to fly me up and to my training every other week. He was so supportive, and I went to Kenya with him for nearly 10 years for three nights just to run a hockey camp together. And I spent some time at an orphanage over there in the afternoons, which was just an amazing experience. Like, oh, Kenya and these people were, yeah, same. But like, they were a really close family, and I'm still friends with some of the people who I was then asked to teach with afterwards. When I left school, they asked me to come back and help out as a gappy, and then I ended up teaching there for 4 years. But they knew probably I wasn't academic, so they helped me play to my strengths, and they were really supportive. It was a whole thing around me, that wraparound education. Like, I don't know how my boys are doing, but they're coping. A really good local school, I would definitely have not got the attributes they have, and they're doing way better than I would have done. And that I needed that boarding school.
It's amazing to think, you know, I speak to so many people who have these memories and these connections with their teachers. They're really important in a lot of people's lives. So what impact has your experience within and without school had on where you are now and the reason you founded All We Can?
I've always treat other people how you want to be treated. Was one of those crash courses, as well as in the box for my tennis lessons. My dad used to shout, in the box when you're serving. And that's done my head in since. But that, and always been like, treat people how you want to be treated. And that in school as well was something, again, that I put up a mask going, actually, I need to treat people how they should be treated, not how I want to be treated. Because how I wanted to be treated was very different from what I was acting. Again, putting the masks on. So now I've had to let all that go. I'm concentrating so hard on those early lessons I had, which was, I want to be kind to people. And then, you know, one day they'll hopefully be kind to me. Well, they'll, you know, they will be kind to me naturally. And so I don't want my kids to sit. I've been sitting back far too long, kind of going, what can little old me do from a little old village in the middle of Wiltshire to impact the world? And I'm thinking, I've got three kids growing up into a world that is getting drowned out by negativity, social media, bombardment of like news that's like sad and depressing. And very rarely do we get these seeds of growth of positivity coming through. I've watched the news people talking every single other day because I tried to ration how much I watch, but they're trying their hardest to make a positive story out of stuff, but they really struggle because it's, you know, it doesn't sell. And I thought, I just need to start doing something where we create more kindness into the world and more gratitude into this world. And so I have started this foundation, which is tracking and inspiring acts of kindness, and went from what can I do little old me to I can still take my first step, and then that will take a second step, and then, you know, that whole ripple effect will happen. It will happen. It's proven scientifically over and over again. If you just take that first step, and there's a book by Charlie Mackesy, The Boy, the Mole, the Fox, and the Horse, and the bit where he's in front of these woods, can't see where he's going, and the boy says to the horse, because obviously in books horses can talk, and he says to the horse, like, wait, I can't see where I'm going, and the horse says, can you see your next step? And he goes, yeah, just take that one. And it's just like, yeah, if you just take that next step. And that really resonated with me, and I'm like, that is what I have to keep doing every day. I wake up, take the next step, try and make another small impact. If you make enough small impacts and you watch it, if you throw loads of pebbles into a lake or a pond, if you just see all these ripples, they all collide, but they all start working together as well. And that's what I'm going for.
Why is it important to measure the social impact of kindness?
That's a great question. Well, I don't want to say measure, more inspire. Because I know our platform, the platform I've designed, does allow you to sort of input an act of kindness, right? So it's a simple idea. You go on, you share your act of kindness, it then becomes visible on a map. But that is then there to inspire others, that any small act can still make an impact, it still make a mark on the world. And it's just trying to have that knock on. All we're trying to do is to inspire someone else to go, well, that's really easy, I can do that. And why am I not doing that? Because you've got to, scientific neuroscience would say, you have to teach your brain, teach yourself to be kind first. Where neuroscience would say that we are designed to bring in negativity faster. So actually we need to flip that and go, I'm going to be proactively kind. I'm going to look for kindness as the first proactive thing to do. And by doing that, you then start changing your own chemistry, your own biology, and start feeling better inside. There's a helper's high. So, you know, you start doing that, you start getting better inside, and you're then easier to be kind out. And I've met some amazing, like, kindness ambassadors and people focusing on trying to make the world better through gratitude and kindness and love. Like, seriously, try to take the grin off their face. It's just almost impossible, because they're just living the life of being kind first and showing love first, and they're not ashamed, because there's nothing to be ashamed about. And I think that's where, in Britain, because that's obviously the one I can relate to most, it's almost a bit shameful, but, you know, too kind. Like, don't talk about being kind. That's not cool. Let's get on the keyboards and abuse people anonymously on Facebook, but don't be proud to be kind, because that's not very, like, British. Actually, sod that. Let's break that book up. Let's go. I'm a kind person. I'm really proud of it. And I'm going to keep trying to be a kind person and set the examples that my kids need the role model for.
The only thing we control is ourselves. So if we can start there, that is definitely the first step to change. James Kellogg, it's been such a pleasure. We're running out of time right now, but I think we need to do this again, because I'd love to explore the stories you're encountering at allwecan.co.
I'd be happy to do that. There's some great stories. And also for the people I'm meeting to talk about it, and, like, in collaboration, a bit like Robin Simpson's, like, who you've spoken to, like, these sorts of people are just doing amazing things, and it's been so much fun. I feel really sort of quite selfish, because I'm getting all these lovely stories like you do. Like, you've got a great platform to put it out. Mine's a little bit of a different platform to get it out. But yeah, it's so great. There is so much good in this world. It's just, yeah, changing the narrative and going, I'm going to believe everyone's good.
I feel so blessed to have encountered you, and the conversations we've already had have inspired and motivated me to do more. So James Kellogg, thank you so much.
Oh, Kim, it's absolutely fun. And I've loved our chat. So this was just another easy chat for me. So thank you. And it was definitely worth waking up in the morning for.
Cultivated by cultural influences beyond borders and shaped by the influence of caring teachers, James's story reminds us how important our environment is in nurturing compassion and kindness. All these years later, in fact, it's built the foundation of a global social impact movement, profound in its simplicity. Kindness isn't random, it is relational. When we acknowledge someone's humanity, when we look them in the eye and really see them, we change something essential in their story. You'll find the links to All We Can Foundation and James's work in the show notes. If this conversation resonated with you and you'd like to get involved in recording acts of kindness, please visit allwecan.co. Because if we want to teach our children anything, let it be this: kindness isn't small, it is powerful, and it is how we can shape the world together. To stay connected and up to date, don't forget to subscribe on my website, kimclyden.com. By subscribing to the podcast or my newsletter, you'll receive updates and story coaching offers directly to your inbox. I look forward to having your company again soon.